This is Ian Ranzer, Program Director here at G-Town Radio. G-Town Radio is in the midst of its third annual fund drive, and we need your help. 2013 has been a year of great opportunities and progress. We've added new shows, helped revitalize our block with a big summer block party, featured work of local artists in our studio, and welcomed hundreds of guests on air to share news not covered elsewhere. We've reached more people than ever before, but our biggest opportunity lies ahead. We've applied to the FCC to get a low-power FM license. This change would dramatically increase the number of people from all walks of life who could participate in true community radio. One thing not changing is our mission, and that's why we need your help right now. G-Town Radio has a fundraising goal of $7,500 by the end of 2013. This will cover all existing costs for the year and put us in an excellent position for 2014. To make a tax-deductible gift, visit the donate page of our website, gtownradio.com/donate. There you can make a secure donation online or learn how to pay by check. Take a few minutes today and make G-Town Radio's third annual fund drive a success. And as always, we thank you for your support.
Information presented on For the People is provided as general legal information. The general legal information is intended to inform consumers, is not intended to substitute for specific legal advice as it relates to the listener's specific legal issue. Consumers are cautioned not to rely on the general legal information broadcast on For the People as legal advice. No attorney-client relationship is created, intended, or implied between the consumers of For the People and Deborah Rainey Esquire, the Compassionate Lawyer, or the Law Office of Deborah D. Rainey. Please consult with an attorney for your specific legal issue.
We the people, says the Constitution, created for creating solutions. However, we the people lack the understanding. Legal terms and conditions sound written on another planet. Our rights we take for granted, often signing away our chances because we don't really know the circumstances. I swear I can't stand it. Then we're so demanding, quick to throw up a picket sign in the streets to exercise our freedom of speech when the situation could have been avoided from the start if we the people conquered basic knowledge of the law. So this is for the people, law in plain language, breaking it down for us in layman terms, Deb expressing her compassion and will for us to learn, not for a check, but to address how to win in these streets. This show is for you. This show is for me. It's for the people. Y'all know I got to give it to Black, too. What's up, what's up, what's up? It's your host, it's your girl, Deb Rainey, the Compassionate Lawyer. Listen, y'all. Y'all in for a good show. And forgive me if I ran. I'm hormonal tonight. What time is it?
It's time for the people on plain language.
We have a really interesting show lined up for you tonight, and I'm expecting this phone to be ringing off the hook. Joining me is my For the People fam, as usual, Black, a.k.a. the Broke Poet. What's up, fam?
What's going on, the Broke Poet in the building?
Aunt Robin, our social media flower child. Hey, Aunt Robin.
Hey.
To Cheddar out there eating dinner. What's up, Gaul? Hey, Juju.
Boop, 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 boop.
Simply the producer. Get that research done. Join us in the studio as a special guest. Really good guy. Very knowledgeable guy. And he's a lawyer, believe it or not. And y'all know how much I dislike lawyers. David Binion. David, what's up? Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's show is Living the Dream, Children of Illegal Immigrants, the DREAM Act. If you didn't know, you're listening to www.gtownradio.com. G-Town, no, what
sound from Germantown?
Ladies and gentlemen, last week's show was a really fun show, and last week's show was called Obama Cares, So Should You. We had two in-studio guests. We had my friend, fabulous guy, another fabulous lawyer. His name is Sean Stevens. What's up, Sean? We had a young man, Peyton Miller, from Enroll America, a nonprofit whose sole mission is to ensure that the folks who were the people that the powers that be were thinking about or aware of and provided as much assistance they can get to have access to all the information that's contained within Obamacare. What we talked about was President Obama's idea wasn't to make sure everybody had health care. Remember that. His initiative was to ensure that folks had access to affordable health care. Remember, we talked about the marketplace. Go to healthcare.gov. You compare all the healthcare plans out there from the insurance companies who have satisfied the necessary governmental requirements, put their insurance programs into the marketplace, and bam, you can go in there and see how you can get inexpensive, affordable healthcare. Also, if you already have healthcare, the incentive may or may not apply to you. Remember, there are going to be some penalties coming down if you have not enrolled or taken advantage of the Obamacare health insurance plan by the new deadline of March 31st, 2014. Keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is an attempt to give you access to affordable health care, not everybody getting health care. Understand that. If you missed that show or any of our shows, you can subscribe to us in iTunes, For the People on Plain Language. Check us out on Facebook, For the People on Plain Language, or go to www.forthepeople.podomatic.com, or you can always go to my website. We expect the studio phone to ring off the hook tonight. Studio line is 215-609-4301.
She had an old person moment.
You can hit us up on old person. Yeah?
You can hit us up on the text line 215-435-4099.
Let's say it together. Tweet us.
Tweet us at FTP Law.
I was putting up texts for the past week and a half getting ready for the show. And let me say this to y'all. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to make sure David knows that he's well appreciated and well loved. I asked David about a month and a half ago to consider coming on and doing a show. He and I met because we were on Lynn Doyle's It's Your Call on a show that was a two-part show. And it was about the Dream Act, or the show that we're sort of talking about tonight. And Lynn actually had some young folks call in who were directly impacted by that show. And I found David's presentation very knowledgeable, but also very passionate. Because y'all know I'm not the typical hither-wither lawyer. I don't roll that way. When you look at David, he does. He's a clean-cut, bearded now, white boy. And he presents like hither-wither, but he's not. He's a very good guy. And he's very knowledgeable. And he impressed me, and that's why I asked him to come on the show. But he's been patient, because we've had three or four psychs with this show being planned. But thank God now it's been planned. So, David, thank you so much for your patience. And hanging in there for us, buddy. Ladies and gentlemen, what impact does the illegal entry of parents into this country have on their children? Do the children of illegal immigrants deserve some manner of legal protection from potential deportation? What is the Dream Act, and is it sufficient to provide some protection to children of illegal immigrants? If every person who's a legal citizen of this great nation is expected to adhere to the law, why should these Dream Act children and their families be treated any differently? Lastly, Is our country's economy, I should probably take the gum out of my mouth, strong enough to endure the legalization and assimilation of potentially millions of these Dream Act children into our fold? That question I came up with based on some of the comments and questions you're going to hear during the course of the show from some of our, I'm going to call them less than open-minded folk who sent us in comments and questions. We're going to talk about that and much, much more. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about living the illegal dream, children of illegal immigrants. David, before we get started, let me ask you this question. This question goes out not just to David, the listeners, to Black, to Robin, anybody that wants to chime in. What the hell is the big deal about this immigration thing? Why are people, I mean, people are up in arms, right? Ready to fight in some instances. You got folks out in Arizona, private people taking up border patrol, and they're like, what the hell is going on? What the F is the big deal? Tell us what you think, David.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know that there's a real simple answer to that question, but I think about a couple of things. I think about 1965 and Senator Ted Kennedy helped put through an immigration reform bill. In some ways, kind of like the one that we're looking at in Congress now.
Okay, David, no offense, but you don't look old enough to know anything that happened in 1965. Bully for you, dude. Go ahead.
I had to read up on this.
oh, damn.
David is prepared.
Mm-hmm. And insulting at the same time. Go ahead, David.
So what that law basically said was America as a country was not just going to limit immigration into the U.S. to Western and Northern Europeans anymore, because that had been the rule for about 40 years.
And slow down and say that again in plain English, David. In other words, Uncle Sam wasn't letting no darkies in. Fair
exactly.
enough?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. What the 1965 law did was it let immigrants who weren't just white Europeans into the country, really for the first time in 40 years. So what that has led to is, over time, a real noticeable change in the demography of our country.
Right. It's starting to be more representative of who we really are.
A more representative of the world,
right,
and of the U.S. as a welcoming place and a country that is built on immigration and immigrants. And so now we see growing populations of people of Asian descent, Latinos, Africans, people from Jamaicans, all over the world. Yeah. And so, and I think that has been building for a long time, and we look at predictions of this tipping point that we hear about that's coming up in the next 30 years or so.
And by tipping point, you're referring to that demographic of folks that's going to become the majority in this country?
Exactly.
And they're not going to be pale faces anymore.
For the first time in the history of this country, we're going to be a majority non-white country.
And that scares a lot of folks.
People see that coming down the pike. It doesn't scare me. My wife is African American.
Really?
Most of my clients are not white.
What's that Spike Lee movie, Jungle Fever? Jungle Fever. Right? Black, you got a clip of Jungle Fever? I'm just playing.
I'm gonna find it. Listen.
So listen, David, let me jump in with you, Sam. I want people to pay attention to something that David said that's really, really profound, and it really, really, I think, is gonna instruct our conversation in every future conversation to come as it relates to immigration, right, and how it turns into this problem, right? And that is when the restriction on allowing other than Europeans to migrate here. And I don't know about folks out there, and y'all know me, I keep it totally 100. There has been no bona fide studies done, research, anecdotal or otherwise, to demonstrate the spike in crime and all the other shit by the non-whites that were let in and continue to be let in since the 65 reform, right?
That's exactly right.
I know that there is a guy who coins himself the National Party for, I don't know, hate some shit. He and someone else called Numbers USA, I think it's called, claim they have these studies that demonstrate crime is spiked in certain big cities based on illegal immigrants, and people have shown, no, that's by people who are citizens born and raised here, that those are the folks that are engaging in the criminality. So I say all that to say to you, as a person who is married to an African-American and as a person who by practice deals with immigration law, how do you handle the naysayers that come at you both in forums like this and otherwhere when you have these discussions about immigration? Do you start with the 65 reform and go forward, or how do you do it? How do you handle it without, you know, coming and turning into Deb, the ignorant bitch that says whatever she wants to say? Excuse me for the bitch. Hold on, y'all. Here's my money. Okay, go ahead.
That's really what she meant.
Somebody's phone is buzzing. Is it mine?
You had to tell everybody. They ain't know.
Go ahead,
on the radio, snitch.
To get to your question, Deborah, it's hard to put yourself into a more welcoming frame of mind when you get hit with that type of ignorance. Mm-hmm. But I think it does help to try to meet people on common ground, because at the end of the day, we're all human beings.
We're all part of
the same big family.
Sister Black, in your troubles, in your trials, as you're changing into this butterfly that I see before me, back when you was wrapped in your cocoon of crime,
I don't know what she's talking
about.
What
was the nationality of your hood? Was it all black, African? Were there immigrants embroiled in there?
Black and Puerto Rican.
Okay, Puerto Ricans are American citizens. What about Dominicans or
the Asian people that run the Chinese stores? A few Dominicans here and there.
And how often y'all talk about people, illegal immigrants?
How every time I go to get a job and there's 1,000 Mexicans working it.
But how do you know the Mexicans that are working it aren't the ones that are actually here legally? You just assume they're not?
Man, listen, just to be off topic real quick. The last factory job I worked at, it was a factory that housed Bath and Beyond products. 1,000 Mexicans ran that line. Immigration came in and took all of them. It was empty.
Wow. Did you get in line for the job, number one?
Oh, yeah, I got a job. I stepped up after that, but, you know what I mean? It's crazy. And it's a lot of factories where...
I know. I used to work for ICE. I mean, back in then it was called DD. Right. Deportation and Detention.
I mean, that's really the only... I can't say that's the... Yeah, that's really the only problem, like, I would have as far as, like, illegal immigrants coming over into the country and stuff like that is they work for really, really cheap. And because of that, that takes away a lot of jobs for people that's already here.
Okay.
And I'm just saying.
Goodness gracious,
I'm
David,
just saying.
Jump in here.
Don't be mad at me for keeping
baby,
it real.
Baby, no, I'm not mad at you because there's so many people out there that feel the same when you do. When people say they work for cheap, they work for what they would expect to get in their country. To us, it's cheap. Yeah. To
but
them,
the value
it's
of
not.
A dollar is different in their
of
country
course.
Than it is here.
So it's unfair for us to continue to say they step in and take jobs from people. They step do. In, get paid what they expect to pay because the business owners are cheapskates. They're the ones that don't want to pay them what they're
oh,
worth.
Oh, yeah, they're the ultimate
right.
a-holes.
Right.
That's
right.
Where
they,
you place
you agree,
most
David?
Of the blame on, but you know.
You place all the blame on the illegals have a right to feed their family just like we do. The challenge comes then, is it fair that this person is going to get the job in lieu of you because he's going to work for less? Then maybe you need to work for less. I don't know the answer.
What?
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just throwing this shit out there. David, jump in.
That shit ain't cool. I'm finna
so
tell
y'all. So what do you think should happen then? I'm curious for a young person. Y'all know I call black and cheddar all them young people embryos. Before we go any further.
I think immigrants should have to go through the same hiring processes as we do.
They do.
No, they don't. They illegal. How do they go through the same hiring process?
Well, they should be aware of the hiring processes. Therefore, they won't.
Yeah.
How many of them do you really think know they're being taken advantage of? David, how many of your clients who are in this immigration situation that need status adjustments and all the like really know that they're being taken advantage of by their employers?
I think they know it. They see the abuses that even most citizens don't see in the workplace because they know if they complain, if they file a report.
Mika's coming.
Right.
All the
Dude,
employer has to do
breaks.
Is call ICE, call immigration on them, and then they're out of there.
But so, wow, go ahead.
One thing that I think having better immigration laws would do to help everybody would be create that wage floor. If you bring everyone out of the shadows, bring everyone under the protection of the laws, including the labor laws,
right.
Then you can't have those employers undercutting the minimum wage, undercutting the legal wages.
But we have labor laws that exist today that demonstrate what you can and can't do, the requirement for the I-9s and all the other things that just aren't being enforced. If immigration really spent a third of the time going after the employers, finding them as it exists in immigration's powers, as they do during all these freaking raids, I think the scales will be balanced to a certain extent, don't you think?
I do agree that immigration has been going on after disproportionately the workers.
Of course.
And not the employers. That being said, to me, thinking about, you know, one of the founding principles of the country, liberty, I don't necessarily know that I want to have permission, not for myself, but if I were an immigrant worker, have to ask the government for permission to work. Because once you impose that restriction on immigrants, in reality, you're imposing it on everyone else, too.
But we all have that permission. We all have that requirement for permission to work. It's called getting a Social Security card. It's called filing a W-2 and getting filing a W-4. We have to do that now as citizens, don't we? To me, that's a seeking permission of sorts, right?
No, that's true. But what I'm saying is that's a relatively recent development.
Sure,
you think back to the frontier days or whatever, you know, New York City, Philadelphia 150 years ago.
Sure.
You didn't have to go get a permit to get a job.
Sure.
And now it seems so commonplace that it's normal and it's accepted. And the system keeps going in a direction of more control and more, you know, more permissions that you have to ask for. Now, aside from that, you know, if we bring these people out of the shadows, give people legal status, then it becomes a moot point.
Sure.
Because they're going to have permission to work because they're going to have legal status and be on the track to citizenship. I think that would do a lot to alleviate the problems that a lot of low-wage workers have who are citizens and seeing that competition. Because that competition is there for that that income level. It's not something that I face. It's
sure.
not something that the people having the debate in the media face. They're not on the factory line.
Of course not. And it's easier for those of us that aren't in that position and is facing us every day to sit there and second guess decisions and say, how dare you this? How dare you that?
Right.
Black, on the other hand, has been there and probably still there to a certain extent. Right.
Indeed.
And so this is what I was going to say. Let's take 1,000 undocumented workers.
Right.
Of that 1,000 undocumented workers, were they to be pulled into the light, like David says, how many of them are here with that eye towards becoming a citizen or just to make money, send home every month to feed my 15 kids and my grandma and grandpa who all live in my same house? You feel me? So how do we or do we distinguish, draw a line between those that are on that track for citizenship, those that just want to be here, work there 5 days, make that money, send it home, go visit the family, come back and continue to work and continue that cycle? Do we draw a line between those two? And then what do we do with the kids who suffer the most in all this, right? Those are the ones that the show was designed for. But before we get there, we had to develop a framework.
I'm about to say, listen, the immigrant workers are getting younger and younger. The kids are the workers.
I know. That's the sick part. And that's the sad part. And we can go into a lot of other stuff that I really don't want to get off into because then I'll start crying and cussing. Reach out 215-609-4301. I had a former client of mine that is in the position and is qualified under this DREAM Act, which I'm going to have David explain and give you the technical name for it, the official name that it was given. But I want Black to play a piece of a clip that I found on YouTube from a kid named Michael. And ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to listen to the first 58 seconds and just tell me how this impacts you. And if it doesn't affect you, I want you to tell me and give me what you got, because I want some of that cold harshness.
All right, well, it's loading.
Sorry, it's my phone. While we're waiting for it to load, Larry Davis, it's called the DREAM Act. It's the nickname of legislation that President Obama was in his team were the sponsors of. Is that right? Sort of, or no? Correct me.
It's been around for a while, since 2001, and it's a piece of legislation that basically would provide a way for children of undocumented immigrants who are undocumented themselves, who were brought here as young people, children, didn't really have any say in the matter, and have grown up here in the United States, along with their citizen peers and classmates, and there's no way for them to get legal, to move forward with their lives.
Okay, I think Black has that clip up for us. Check it out real quick. If you got a comment after you hear Michael, 215-609-4301.
Honor roll student throughout my elementary school, middle school, started high school at Maryville. And really got involved within the Junior ROTC program, a program specially designed to motivate young people to become better citizens. And in there, that's where I got to see a lot of the military part of, you know, of our country. My instructors were former veterans of war. One of my instructors was a Sonoran. He came from Sonora, Mexico, and he was
It cut off. This particular clip, ladies and gentlemen, what touched me about it is Michael's a high school student and thinks he's going to bring it back. And he is one of those kids who would directly benefit from the bullshit that this DREAM Act, bullshit protectionist DREAM Act, purports to provide, which you'll hear during the course of the show. It's not really much protection. There's no guarantee that their status is going to change, right? It does allow them to get, a Social Security card, identification, and go to school, right?
So that brings up an important point.
Jesus God.
There's the DREAM Act, per se, which is a bill that's been pending in Congress for the last 12 years and has never passed.
What's the official name of that shit?
Development Relief Education for Alien Minors Act.
Okay. DREAM. Hence DREAM.
DREAM. Really great messaging there, and the undocumented youth have really taken that and run with it, that DREAM idea. What we do have now, so we don't have a DREAM Act. What we do have is called Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which is not gone through Congress. It's an administrative reform. It's a rule change that was
DACA.
Passed by the president. Yes, DACA for short. And this is what, Deborah, what you're talking about, that's temporary. It doesn't provide a path to a green card or citizenship. It provides temporary protection from deportation for 2 years, allows the beneficiary to get a work permit, Social Security number, and in some states, including Pennsylvania, a driver's license.
Wow. Black, you said you had found something else.
What to do in life, you know, really motivated me to be here where I'm at today. I feel like I was taught something to be a leader, to persuade people to become better people as they grow, and I just wish to do that. You know, I just want an opportunity to defend my freedom and those of this country. I feel like our youth in general, not just the undocumented youth, we need a purpose. We need something in the horizon to strive towards. And we're just here as Dreamers to provide our support for anybody. DreamHack would allow students who have been here for years, who are undocumented, who were brought at an early age, before the age of 16. It would allow them to continue with their education and or join the military service to gain a legal path towards residency. It would allow us to give back. We've been giving back for so many years, so we just need, I feel like we need to be recognized. Our country needs so many leaders right now. And we as DreamHack students feel that we can contribute at a higher level. It began with a couple of DreamHack students coming out with me and going to a recruiting station and try to get enlisted in the service, but because of our status, we weren't able to join the armed forces. And this was actually, I already knew about the process, but I just wanted to go through it one more time because not many of the people in this nation know about the process, that you at least need to be a resident and or a citizen to be in the armed forces. We came down to San Antonio.
David, correct me if I'm wrong. I worked law enforcement back in the 90s, from 92 to 96, with immigration as a detention enforcement officer. Now they're called immigration custom enforcement agents, some old dumb shit. Back then, there were alternative pathways to citizenship. Join the military, for example, 3 years or whatever your commitment was. Marrying a U.S. citizen, for example. Those guys then still weren't documented immigrants. But that was a pathway that was open to them. That's no longer open, according to what this kid was saying. Educate me. What happened? What am I missing? What did I lose?
So some of that's before my time, but...
smart ass. Everybody got an age joke tonight, huh? Okay, no, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So the general point, though, is that over the years, and especially since the 1996 laws that really shut the door on a lot of people... the laws have just every year been getting more and more restrictive. So ways forward for people that used to exist in the 70s, 80s, and even 90s, are those doors have mostly shut now. And so it is the case that in order to enlist in the military, you have to at least have a green card.
Wow.
So this DACA program that allows some young people, dreamers, to come out of the shadows does not allow them to join the military.
Wow, particularly excluded or just didn't mention it?
Specifically excluded. And
is there a website, David, that listeners can go to right now to pull up and read the text of DACA if they're like us and they just like to read the text of
Sure. Well, that's the interesting thing about this policy. It's so informal that the whole thing is literally governed by a Q&A, a FAQ.
FAQs,
on the USCIS.gov website.
Type into your browser, ladies and gentlemen, USCIS, United States Customs and Immigration Service.gov. Click on the link that says DACA FAQs. Is that the link? I think I went there earlier the day before the
show. In fact, if you just Google it, USCIS DACA FAQ,
okay,
that pulls up the rules that really govern the whole program.
And what was the nature of the executive order that President Obama signed that made such a big deal and actually brought to my attention, and I'm sure ignorant folk like me, this whole notion of a dream, this Dream Act coming to fruition in some shape, form, or otherwise?
Sure. So the announcement from June of last year that the president made, it basically tracks the Dream Act, the same requirements, that the individual have to have been brought to the U.S. before they turned 16, have been here 5 years in the U.S. before June of 2012, not have any serious criminal convictions, either be enrolled in school or have a high school diploma or GED, and basically pay the filing fee.
Which is $450 or some outrageous amount.
About that, yeah. It very high compared to other types of administrative fees that you see in other agencies.
Wow.
And so if you met those requirements, then you could apply for DACA. And there are all kinds of different estimates of how many people would qualify, anywhere from between about 800,000 to 2 million.
Wow.
And so far we've seen much lower numbers than some of us expected to see.
Because it seems to me they put unnecessary roadblocks in the way. Where are these undocumented workers going to get $450 or whatever the hell the filing fee is? This is crazy. Ladies and gentlemen, you guys were watching the post that I put on Facebook, and I swear to God, some of those comments were exactly what we were getting in from our listeners, our supporters, some of our less than liberal kind of listeners, guys that don't have no damn sympathy whatsoever. Robin, what's that first question? Holy mackerel.
Okay, this is Marie from the West Coast.
West Coast? What's that? Does that mean California,
just
Washington?
Just says Marie from the West Coast.
Chicken shit? She don't want to tell her where she's from.
I am a 45-year-old Mexican national.
¿Qué pasó?
And have been in this country illegally for the past 25 years.
And she bragging, too. She bold.
I go to work every day. I mind my own business, and I take care of my family. This country was founded by immigrants and stolen from the Indians. Damn. How dare those Americans who probably can't trace more than three generations of being actual Americans.
Damn, Maria. Go ahead, girl. Put it down.
Judge me and mine.
Wow.
We are the ones who do the jobs that you so-called citizens are too lazy or too full of yourselves to do. If you lose us, your economy will definitely fail.
Well, who wants to respond to the West Coast? Black, you like,
listen,
you got something on your
mind. Damn it. Now she got a point, though. It's back to what I was saying.
I'm not so sure that there's any particular part of what Maria said that can be denied, if you will. David, look like you had a thought on your face. What are you trying to say?
I mean, that's a little harsh, you know. But she does have the point that until the 1840s, California and most of the western United States was part of Mexico. Now Mexico stole it from the Native Americans. So that's another story. But she makes some good points. But, you know, I'll just be honest. Coming at the issue with that sort of attitude is probably not going to win over a lot of converts. I'm not in her shoes, and I can't tell her what to say or how to say it, and I wouldn't do that. But like I said before, we're trying to find some common ground and look for an outcome that's going to be better for everyone, citizens and immigrants.
I have to say that I think that Maria's statement with her writing us was very bold, and Maria, we thank you for that. I think that your statement that you and your people do the jobs that we're too lazy or don't want to do, I have to take issue with that for the fact that if you're going to continue to be here and want to assimilate with us at some point, we got to get together, us and you guys, to demand that the employers stop undercutting us, those of us that are here illegally, and hiring you guys and paying you to lower wages. So you guys have to join in with us, some kind of push to make sure that that stops. Also, I hear the angst and the anger in your voice. Understand the people you're talking about, those citizens. Some of us are a little upset that you're making that money and ain't paying us back. You're not paying taxes, right? Well, maybe when you go to the store and you buy stuff, you're paying the sales tax, but you're not contributing
actually,
to the other
sort
of taxes.
That's a common misconception. It's true that a lot of people who get paid in cash aren't filing their taxes. That's true of some citizens as well.
Oh, a lot of citizens, of course.
There are a growing number, I would say, of undocumented immigrants who are paying local, state, and federal taxes, and they're keeping track of it. They're reporting even their cash income. And
you
they're
mean
doing
to tell
this,
me these people are actually filing income tax returns?
They are. I have a lot of clients who are doing that.
Are you serious?
It's God's honest truth.
And CIS hasn't snatched into that and start tracking them and finding them and deporting them?
Well, see, that's not necessarily their decision to make. The IRS does not want immigration up in their business.
Of course not.
Trying to take away their income.
Wow.
And so the IRS will take money from any source.
Of course they will. Wow, that's interesting. Maria, just let me say thank you so much for writing in West Coast. Next question.
Okay, Peter from Waco, Texas.
Wait, Waco?
That's what it says, Waco,
wow.
Texas, yep.
Okay. Let me get my gun cocked and ready, because I know why. I have a feeling I know what's coming. Go ahead, Waco.
Okay.
What's up, Peter?
All illegal immigrants should be deported, and those who assist them should be fined and or put in jail. We have enough heartache just being able to provide for our own citizens. Our economy is in the toilet. Jobs are scarce. Why should we reform our laws just to accommodate people who blatantly show that they will not adhere to or honor our laws by their very presence? Go back to your own country. They owe you. We do not.
Wow. Peter, wow. David, right after this caller. Ooh, mon Dieu. Caller, you're in the air. Thanks for calling for the People Law and Plain Language. Deb Brady, your host. Who this?
This is Renee.
Hey, Simply the producer.
Producer.
What's going on with you?
Well, you know, I'm listening to the show, and, you know, it's amazing when you form an opinion about something from a distance.
What do you mean?
Up until probably, I would say 10 years ago. I'm not sure what my opinion was on immigration back then, but I had never met anyone. Well, that, I'm not going to say that. I lived 4 years in Houston, Texas, so
what
that
about,
should say
yeah,
enough. And we were so close to Mexico, so that was just kind of a given. But as far as personally knowing someone, when our daughter was in high school, she met this young lady who was nice, and they hung out. They became friends, sleepovers, hanging out and stuff. And at some point, I'm not sure when, during this friendship that lasted through college, that she shared with our daughter that they were here illegally. Sometimes she would go home, or if she went away for camping, she did a lot of church trips and stuff. She would come home, and no one was there, and she had to track them down because they had to leave from one place and go to another. I remember when she was at college coming home for holidays and coming home, and the time she got there again, they had moved again, so they were always moving and kind of watching that firsthand.
Wow.
When there's children involved was a learning experience, to
and
say the least.
Producer, this is David. This is her way of bringing us back around to the Dream Act, the Children of Illegal Immigrants, when she's in the studio.
But I remember when it came time for her to graduate from high school, and I think that's when she shared with her friends that her hopes of going to college, even though she went to a fantastic high school here in Philadelphia, one of the magnet high schools, and, you know, straight-A student, her dreams of going to college were kind of all falling by the wayside because she didn't, and I think that's when her parents shared with her that, well, you can't really go to college because we're kind of here illegally.
Wow.
That's horrible.
I remember.
So
I remember
her and
that.
Her brother, who was older,
I remember.
Maybe a year or so older, kind of faced the same thing. She did wind up, the church, I think, helped them get into a college somewhere, I don't know, Middle America somewhere, and then she faced the same thing. I have this college degree, but, which I'm not even sure how she maneuvered that, but she has a college degree, but she still can't work.
So during the course of your conversation with our daughter about this whole illegal status of her friend, and I have to check myself because I almost said her name, what did Niall understand? That's our daughter. Niall, I can say your name all day long, baby. Did she understand this idea that her friend was here and the family was here illegally, I should say?
She did, and those discussions started a discussion of, you know, when you have those ethical discussions with your child that we had kind of started years earlier where, you know, ethics are not black and white. It's always kind of earn you scratch your head when it's in your face. Mm. So it kind of led to that, and, I mean, we had open conversations about it, you know, in reference to how can we help, what can we do, and but it led her to learn more about immigration, more about the laws, and knowing that the family didn't have a lot, or sometimes she would spend the weekend over here, we would drop her off, and no one's there, and then she's calling around. Sometimes she would have to come back to our house until the next day, and she'd figure out where they moved to.
Is that the one that used to have a 10-finger discount in the house?
Sometimes.
Okay. Sorry, producer, I had to break that up a little bit. So listen, you told us that you weren't sure what your opinion was. What's your opinion now on this whole notion, immigration reform, illegals, get out, go
That's
back
my
to...
point. I think most of us have an opinion. And as an African-American, sometimes other folks have opinions about African-Americans because they've only seen us on TV,
right,
or, you know, wherever, or all African-Americans do this or they do that.
Right.
It's easy to make those big leaps about what your opinion is until you're faced with it.
I know when affirmative actions was first talked about and applied and really given, you know, the push it initially had when it first came about, I was one of the ignorant people who said, if you're not black, affirmative actions was not meant to benefit you. In my ignorant mind, affirmative actions was limited to benefit the descendants of the slaves. And I got my time card punched and my ignorant card removed after doing some research and finding out that women in general, Latinos, Asians, all of them suffer the same sort of discrimination that African-Americans suffered from. So it took me a while to get my right. education cap tightened back up. Producer, as usual, we always appreciate your offerings. And David,
right. And so to answer your question, because of that, I'm no closer to having, I guess, a hard opinion on it.
Right.
because I've been touched in a human way.
Right.
Oops. That was my first real experience. Houston, probably. I was in my early 20s when I was in Houston, Texas.
Who's the dude that bought you the car? The dude that bought you the car was illegal. What's his name? From Africa. He bought you that car.
No, he wasn't illegal.
Oh. He was just selling guns.
He wind up. He was in the import-export business. Because he was importing Levi jeans and cologne and all that kind of stuff.
And AK-47.
And eventually he got deported, right. Not because he was illegal. Was that underneath all the Levi jeans and stuff that he was sending back to Africa were arms.
AKs and, you know, Czech rifles, man. And the like. Producer.
Yeah. So, he was originally here. He went to college here, and, you know, so he was a U.S. citizen or dual citizen or whatever, but he kind of got deported on that, yeah.
What's up, Mickey? Mickey, Mikey, whatever your name is. Producer,
but
we really appreciate you. We appreciate your offering, producer. We're going to take our first scheduled break, and we're trying to stay on the format because we know you're listening to us. You're going to call us and cuss us out.
And so far, it's a really interesting show. I'm actually listening to it.
Okay.
I'm
going
to have to turn it off, though, because I have to get some work done. When I listen to the show, I can't work.
I hear you. Producer, thank you.
I've been very distracting.
Well, that's a good thing. And David, you don't know, but she's really controlling. She's controlling me right now from the airways. Deborah, get off the air.
You're going to be on the
producer,
couch tonight.
Thank you so much. Nah, she wouldn't do that. She loves me. Thank you, darling. I mean, producer, sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to For the People, Law and Plain Language, Living the Illegal Dream. And by the way, we have to give love to Nora, Cheddar's better half. She was the one that after some food that we had Friday at our meeting, she came and helped us get the title zeroed in and narrowed down. Nora, thank you. Hope you guys are enjoying your dinner. Cheddar, I hope you enjoy your dinner. And to your sister up here from D.C., tell her have a safe trip when she leaves
back.
Shout
out to Cheddar.
It's about time for our regular break, but I want you guys to contemplate this on while we're at our break. What do we do? What do we owe? We, Americans, what do we owe the kids of these illegal parents who bring them over here? Like David said, when they're at an age where they don't have no control, they can't say, no, I'm not going when they're 2 years old. What do we owe them? Do we owe them anything? Think about that, and we'll be right back.
one time. Yeah. Yeah. Yo, all I need is one mic, one beat, one stage, one nigga front, my face on the front page. Only if I had one gun, one girl and one crib, one God to show me how to do things as son did. Pure, like a cup of virgin blood, mixed with 151, one sip will make a nigga flip. Writing names on my hollow tips, plotting shit, mad violence, so I'm gon' body this hood, politics acknowledge it. Leave bodies chopped up in garbages, seeds watch us, grow up and try to follow us, police watch us, roll up and try knocking us. One knee eyed up, could it be my time is up? With my luck, I got up. The cop shot again. Bus stop glass burst, a fiend drops his Heineken. Ricocheting between the spots that I'm hiding in. Blacking out, I shoot back. Fuck getting hit. This is my hood, I'm a rap to the death of it. To everybody, come on. Little niggas is grown, hood rats. Don't abortion your wound. We need more warriors soon. Sent from the stars, sun and the moon. And it's like a police chase, street sweepers and coppers. Stick up kids with no conscience, leaving victims with doctors. If you really think you're ready to die with nines out, this is what nines is about, nigga. The time is now.
All I need is one mic, one mic, one mic, one mic. All I need is one mic.
This is Ian Ranzer, Program Director here at G-Town Radio. G-Town Radio is in the midst of its third annual fund drive, and we need your help. 2013 has been a year of great opportunities and progress. We've added new shows, helped revitalize our block with a big summer block party, featured work of local artists in our studio, and welcomed hundreds of guests on air to share news not covered elsewhere. We've reached more people than ever before, but our biggest opportunity lies ahead. We've applied to the FCC to get a low-power FM license. This change would dramatically increase the number of people from all walks of life who could participate in true community radio. One thing not changing is our mission, and that's why we need your help right now. G-Town Radio has a fundraising goal of $7,500 by the end of 2013. This will cover all existing costs for the year and put us in an excellent position for 2014. To make a tax-deductible gift, visit the donate page of our website, gtownradio.com/donate. There you can make a secure donation online or learn how to pay by check. Take a few minutes today and make G-Town Radio's third annual fund drive a success. And as always, we thank you for your support.
Welcome back to For the People, Law and Plain Language. It's me, your girl, your host, Deb Brandy, the compassionate lawyer. On the other side of the break, you heard from Sly and the Family Stone. Everybody, people, what?
Everyday people,
oh,
man.
I got the title messed up.
How you
That's
ain't
going to
know that?
That's my song. After following Sly, we heard from Nas, one mic. That last little ditty was Ian Ranzer. Ian, if I fucked up your last name, forgive me. Ian is the program director here at G-Town Radio. He's letting y'all know and reminding you what we do. Like we've been done for the last month and a half. The G-Town's in the final leg of our 2013 fundraiser. Please go to the G-Town website, www.gtownradio.com. Click on the donate link. Donate what you can, $5, $10. Y'all know what For the People's about. Donate $5 to $15. We give you a shout-out on the air. $20 to $25, we give you a shout-out, call you at home. $30, we give you a T-shirt, call you at home, shout you out. $50, we give you an autograph For the People T-shirt, call you at home, shout you out. $75, you get to come to the studio and be a guest on a show that we choose, and you get to have fun. You also get the shout-out, obviously, in the call and the autographed T-shirt. The $100 donator gets all that, plus an autographed T-shirt, plus a half-hour free legal consultation with me over the telephone, and I promise you, you'll get a legal consultation. I won't bitch and rant at you until afterwards, and that part, you won't got to pay for it all. Do what you can. Reach into your pocket. Donate for G-Town. If you like what you hear on our show, and all the shows on G-Town, please donate and help us out. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about living the illegal dream. Children of illegal immigrants and the DREAM Act that David corrected. It's called the DACA, the what?
DACA for short.
And what's the what does it stand for?
That's remember. Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals.
Okay, and those are the people that come with illegal alien parents who bring them here and they have no choice. The other side of the break, Robin read some questions from listeners. Peter from Waco, Texas, started out his question. His comment scared the shit out of me, but Peter actually made some really valid points. We heard from Maria from the West Coast who said, listen, I've been here 45 years illegal. I go to work every day. I do jobs that lazy-ass Americans y'all don't want to do. I'm tired of y'all getting on me. Without us, your economy would tank. I'm not so sure we agree with everything she said.
That's not true. I would but take your job.
We feel you, Maria. We feel you, my girl. Peter, Robin, I don't remember what Peter said, but I know some of it's made me get my ire up a little bit. But then when he finished, I had to say, maybe he's right. He got something there. Can you read that again?
Okay.
Right.
Robin. I can read it again. Okay. This is Peter. What Peter says is, all illegal immigrants should be deported, and those who assist them should be fined and or put in jail.
Okay, Peter, that's way too harsh.
We have enough heartache just being able to provide for our own children. I'm sorry, for our own citizens. Our economy is in the toilet. Jobs are scarce. Why should we reform our laws just to accommodate people who blatantly show they will not adhere to, who blatantly show that they will not adhere to or honor our laws by their very presence.
And yeah, after this show, y'all, we're going to have a remedial reading for Robin, so it's cool. We got it.
Go back to your own.
I probably need that too, y'all.
They owe you. We do not. No, I don't have my glasses.
Wow. Oh, okay. There you go. I like Robin. So, Peter, I'm going to respond and ask Black Robin and David to chime in. And by the by, producer was our first caller, 215-609-4301.
Right.
She told us a story about our daughter's friend who ultimately disclosed to her friends that she was here illegally and some of the trials that she had to go through with respect to getting enrolled in college. And even now she has her degree. She can't get a job because she can't file the I-9 and all the other necessary paperwork she's going to have to file to become allowed to work. Hopefully she can hook up with someone who has this experience at Dachau, and you're going to be able to get David's contact information before we go off the air so folks can reach out to him. Peter, I don't agree with you. All immigrants, all illegals should be locked up and sent to jail. Come on now. And what I do think is that the employers who continue to hire these immigrants in lieu of paying the national required minimum wage should be fined out the ass. Because but for them willing to offer these low, sorry-ass wages, the immigrants wouldn't be coming there trying to get that job. The immigrants are entitled to the minimum wage that our country has set as a national level, period. Immigrants right. or not, if you work in this country, you should get the national minimum wage that was set. Insofar as go back to your own country, and they're here, he said something that really shook me. How do we know they're going to follow the law? And I'm paraphrasing, because they're here illegally in violation of the law, thus demonstrating their unwillingness to follow our laws. That don't make sense to me. I mean, I think I get what he's saying, but dude, have you ever been in a situation where you had to flee the country of your origins because you can't feed your family? Because you got people knocking on your door in the middle of the night, telling you what you can and can't say, telling you to whom you can and can't pray. Come on now. That's a bit harsh. Don't you think, David? Jump in. Black, y'all jump in. I think that particular part of his comment threw me badly in the first part, obviously, yeah. Putting everybody in jail.
He obviously can't really relate to the immigrants, per se. And he was harsh. See, I'm not that harsh. You know what I'm saying? I just want you to qualify for the job that I'm getting the same way I have to. That's it. I don't mind you living here. Hey, we all migrated here at some point. None of us Indian.
Some of us, and a lot of us against our wills, huh?
Right. So I'm not against like illegal immigrants living here. I think Peter's just harsh. Maybe a Mexican stole his wife or something like that. I don't know. He throw everybody in jail and help him. Peter got... It's personal with Peter.
Listen, y'all, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying every single solitary illegal who's here was fleeing their country for fear of retribution or fear of being oppressed and the like. But I'm saying that people that come here for a number one reason, and that is to have a better life for themselves, their family. Y'all, we got that small few come across the border for criminal activity. They're a real, 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 real small number. The vast majority of here come here because it's the land of the opportunity. The land where I can get a job, get constant money, and help provide for my family. David, you had something you wanted to say. I saw it on your face.
Sure. His question is, how do we know that they're going to obey the law if we bring them out of the shadows and give them legal status because they've already broken the immigration laws? And looking at my clients, I can speak from experience. They're some of the most law-abiding people that I know because they have to be.
Right. They're scared.
They get pulled over for speeding.
For some of them,
that's the end of the road, and they're deported. And so, and studies have been done. I think you mentioned before the show that some groups have come up with some bogus studies that show that undocumented people commit crimes at a higher rate. No, the truth is the opposite.
I've got exactly.
And it's obvious why. Now, the people that I know who are undocumented, my clients and my friends, they want nothing more than to get right with the system, with the law. Right now, there's 11 million people in the U.S. who can't do that. They have no way forward.
11 million?
Not just that they can't pay filing fees. If they could, they would find a way. They would borrow the money, work hard to earn it.
There's nothing for them that allows them to do it.
The doors are all shut right now for those people.
Wow.
And if they leave, you know, there's this idea, well, go to the back of the line. Leave the country, do it the right way. As soon as they set foot outside of the country, most of them are going to be stuck for at least 10 years and maybe for life. Wow. And so that's not really a realistic option either.
They're losing everything that they've established and built here.
Exactly.
I got a comment I want to read from Yvette from North Jersey. What's up, North Jersey? I'm not sure where she's at.
Shout out to New Drew.
I think it's horrible the things that folks say about families who are just trying to make a better life for themselves in our country. Why can't those naysayers see that we are a beacon of hope to all who are oppressed and suffer in their homelands? What happened to send you, you're poor, you're sick, you're downtrodden? We used to be a country of sympathy and empathy, but we seem to be turning into a country of greed and selfishness. I think she meant what happened to send us, you're sick, you're poor, you're oppressed. I think some of that is a part of a saying that's on the torch of the Statue of Liberty. Is it on the torch or is it on her foot? It's on one of those parts of the Statue of Liberty. David, you know where
it's on there somewhere. It's from a poem by Emma Lazarus that has become iconic about the U.S. as somebody who takes in the strivers, the poor of the world, who have nowhere else to go.
The torch is metaphorically supposed to light people's way to us, right?
Liberty's lifted lamp.
Right. That's so cool. Yvette, I feel you. Thank you so much for the comment. When I said I was torn, here's what I meant. Black folk had to suffer the inequities and the horrors of slavery, right? And but for us stepping in, rolling up our sleeves, having all the heroes of the Underground Railroad, the abolitionists, and all those folks who helped bring about change, part of me says, then, damn it, stay in your own damn country and do the same thing. Bring about that change.
Right.
Reach out to international folks for assistance, but don't keep running away, because the best way I think to make it better for your kids is to stand in and fight. The other side of me says, you know what? At some point, you got to know when to turn tail and run. Right? What y'all think? I mean, am I reaching? What? What you think? Part of me says, you can't change shit if you don't stand there and roll up your sleeves and get in the fight.
I think you're reaching, though, because... I'm going to say you're reaching a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
But staying in your country and fighting it out?
Yeah, because if I'm the head of my household and my children are starving, I don't have time to rally up the troops to set off a civil war. I got to feed them now. And if this is a way that I know I can do it immediately, then that's the route I will probably take.
Nelson Mandela spent 27 years in prison.
He was a great man.
Just to bring about reform. He had family to feed, but they worked together as a network. So if you stand up as the head of your household and do what you got to do, the folks around you are going to rally and make sure your kids eat.
Probably will, but
you're not willing to take
risk. Somebody has to be willing to take that risk to have a starting point.
So some of these folks keep running over here
and
stopping.
And over there is worse. Like, you're talking about dictatorships. They go to war with each other and kill each other. You know what I'm saying?
But you got to be willing to die for what you believe in if necessary.
All right, everybody. Deb trying to get y'all committed suicide.
I'm not suggesting that you go that extreme. It's the ideal I'm talking about. If we can go through what we went through, let's be real, y'all. Discrimination still exists based on race, color. Right. It ain't going no goddamn where. But we had folks who stood in and stood the test of time and did what they did. Granted, now, not all those countries have this constitution that we have that guarantees the things that the government ain't supposed to do, the media that's not controlled by the government. I get all that. But where there is a will, there is a way.
Yeah, things like that take time, 50%
of me
though.
Say that. The other side of me says, you know what, damn that, I need to take care of my family. If this is the quickest and safest way I'm going to do it, then I'm going to do it. So I get it.
Right.
But there is that internal battle within me, David.
And, you know, you're talking maybe more about the human rights, civil rights, liberty side. There's also the economic argument that I've heard of brain drain. You know, Why are we going to steal away all of the best and the brightest of these poor countries to come and work for us, and then leave them behind basically poverty and despair? Now, but I disagree with that argument too, as you might imagine. Mm-hmm. And this is the way I look at it. If I were in that person's shoes, let's say I've worked my ass off in Senegal or somewhere, gone to school, and I've got a job offer in the United States, and I have a way to pave the future for not just myself, but my kids and maybe their kids. I'm going to take that opportunity, and I don't think, you know, I wouldn't want somebody else from another country who has all these other privileges to tell me, no, it's for your own good and for your own country's good. Stay there and work under really some harsh conditions. We got to think about the systems that produce these results, these outcomes in some of these countries: corruption, lack of rights. You know, like you said, there's not the legal structure in a lot of these countries that we have here in the United States that allows people to fulfill their potential. I'll give an example as an analogy. We look at some of the country's sort of most blighted cities or most struggling cities. Let's take Camden for an example.
The hell with Camden. Detroit, bankrupt.
Detroit.
North Philly.
If I'm a white guy living in the suburbs,
you ain't got shit to
can
worry
I
about.
Really tell, you know, a young black kid from Detroit, you need to stay there and take care of your own problems?
Sure you know? Can.
I
you
would
need to be prepared
I don't think
to take what's coming back
how about
at
you,
you
go there and help me?
Well, see, no, that's the thing ahead. And that's the other argument. People say, well, we should give them foreign aid. We should help them develop their economies. And that's nice in theory, but it's kind of like giving a homeless guy a nickel. Because the reality is, we don't do that. We say that would be nice, but our foreign aid is a fraction of 1% of our federal budget. And it just keeps falling farther down the list of priorities in a recession situation like this. Hmm. And so my feeling is, as a matter of freedom, as a matter of equal rights, who am I to say, you know, you need to stay where you were born, really as an accident of birth? Because the only difference between me and them, it's not anything I did. It's not anything they did.
Sure.
It just happened to be where we were born.
But
and that's the way I look at it.
No one's suggesting that they have to just merely stay there and wage that war. How many dissidents are kicked out of their countries and wage war from foreign soils? All I'm saying, the idea and the notion should not just immediately disappear from them. They should be willing to stand up, roll up their sleeves, and do that which they can do in addition to caring for their families. Because at the end of the day, they have to be looking ahead and looking behind them to see the folks that are coming up behind them. In particular, their kids. They had to have known coming up here the risk they're going to face to sneak into this country illegally, what the future was going to look like for their children. Let's be honest. People don't sneak here not knowing it's illegal. They know it's illegal. But they're not looking at that. They're looking at the grander picture. I'm coming here to make a better life for my kids. But are you really making a better life for your kids when your kids end up being raised here, forget all about their roots of coming from Mexico, Santo Domingo, or whatever, and to them, they're a true blue American. But then they realize, wake up one day, oh my God, I have no rights. I don't get to enjoy the protections afforded to Americans and I was raised here. How is that helping your family? It's not. So I think the parents have, shame on them, they have some responsibility, a lot of the responsibility, for the kids who are now in this position to need DACA and other reforms in order for them to make that informed decision of where to go. So right now the kids decide, stay here, risk deportation if you don't qualify for the bullshit limitations under DACA, right? Or or go back to a country you've never probably been in. Don't speak the damn language and try to make it work there. What the hell?
Now, that's horrible.
Shame on the parents for putting them through that. At some point, we have to say to the parents, you're making all these efforts to care for your kids, but at the end of the day, are you putting them in a good position?
And to respond to that, you know, I can't speak from personal experience, obviously. But I've worked with a lot of dreamers. I've had a lot of dreamers as clients. And what I hear again and again is, you know, if I were in that situation, I might feel a little bit bitter. I might feel a little bit jaded and ask my parents, you know, why did you put me through this? But that's actually not what I hear from them themselves. They're grateful for their parents, the sacrifices that their parents made for them. And truth be told, the majority of them, are going to have more opportunities, are going to have a better life for them and their children here in the United States than they would have had in their home countries.
We presume that, but we can't predict the future. We don't know if the conditions in their home countries are going to improve or have improved.
I look at it this way. The people coming across the border into the United States are not the ones living high on the hog in Mexico and Guatemala and El Salvador. They're the ones in the most desperate circumstances who, as a matter of survival, whether it's economic survival, whether it's physical survival, are bringing their families up to the United States. And they're the ones who have that drive and that initiative to try to make life better for their children. And what I see coming from the dreamers themselves is gratitude to their parents for giving them that opportunity.
Listen to this comment. This is from Jesus. Dominican Republic by way of the Boogie Down Bronx. What's up?
All right, damn Boogie Down Bronx.
My mother, father, two sisters, and brothers and I have been in this country since I was 5 months old. I'm now 15. My mother told me 3 years ago that we were here illegally, and I was so embarrassed and upset that I ran away from home. I was gone and had no contact with my family until 2 months ago. I moved in with my American girlfriend and her family. They took and take great care of me. Although I still live with my girlfriend and her family, I forgave my mom and dad and started talking to them again and shared my feelings of disgust and embarrassment with them. I heard about this Dream Act. What do I have to do to apply, and what exactly is it? I read this because I remembered reading this when I got it. And what struck me was at 15, like I was saying before, living your life as an American kid, then all of a sudden the bubble bursts.
Right.
And you're told you have no status whatsoever. And by the by, your skin is brown, so the police gonna fuck with you anyway, no matter where you're at. Let them find out you're illegal. You got it 10 times worse.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully Jesus has been listening to our discussion about DACA and Dream Act. Once again, really quickly, David, give us a brief rundown of what the basic sort of requirements are to qualify.
Sure. So based on what he's saying, he came here at a very young age. He's now 15 years old, which is the minimum age to be able to send in the paperwork and apply for the work permit for DACA, as long as he doesn't have certain types of criminal convictions. Now, it's not a black and white line. Some types of criminal convictions you'd be okay, and some you won't. So if there's been any contact with the police whatsoever, you want to check with an immigration attorney or a nonprofit. But if he's in school now, if he's dropped out of school, he's got to look at enrolling again, because that is one of the requirements for someone his age. If you've got a diploma or a GED already, you're good. So I would suggest to him, reach out. If he's up in the Bronx, there's a lot of nonprofit organizations in New York City that serve the undocumented community and can help him apply for DACA, which I think would be a big help for him and for his girlfriend.
As an attorney who deals with these sort of immigrants and others in your practice, Dave, as an immigration attorney, you and I both know as attorneys, we do more than just represent our clients legally, right? We sit there sometimes, we have psychological therapy sessions, and we act like marriage counselors and the like. Pretend like we're a fly on the wall. I'm curious to know, aside from giving your clients information about DACA, what else do you tell them? Do you tell them anything else? Do you say, what stops you from saying, Mama, Daddy, shame the hell on you. Look what you did to your child. I would, because my clients know me to be totally 100. And I'm not saying as a way to put them down. I'm saying it as a way to give them more things to think about. When I was a PD, my biggest pet peeve was to be in juvenile court watching these 13, 14-year-old kids standing in front of the judge because their parents were too goddamn busy to take care of them. And before that, when I was in immigration law enforcement, and I had to go to JFK and put handcuffs on a 16-year-old fucking juvenile who was brought here illegally, it used to drive me the hell crazy. Mm. So I incorporate all that into who you see sitting before you, this crazy bitch who, you know, does the law sometimes. How do you handle that? Your personal shit with your clients. I mean, I know there's got to be times when you just want to say, what the f-? You feel me? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, no. sometimes I can't resist the temptation to just lay in. But I figure they hear it enough from the judge, from the ICE attorney, from their bosses, from their documented family members. I try not to be too tough on them. But it's, you know, it does add up. You see these stories, really heartbreaking stories with your clients, and you sort of walk that path with them, and it can be tough when you lose those cases. And part of that is what motivates me to keep doing this work.
All right. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we are running out of time, and I don't want to go too longer than we're supposed to. We're supposed to be off the air by 9:25 so my girl Black can get on the air. And I'm saying to you and all the members of the Broken Truth Show, I apologize last week. We took over. We pled into 5 minutes of y'all time, and it won't happen again, I promise you. Forgive us for that. So, David, what I want you to do for me, you have a minute. You are speaking now to those youngsters who may qualify under DACA. You're speaking to those parents who are listening, right? Some of them are still in their countries contemplating coming over here with their young kids. What do you say to them? Speak from your heart. This is your last chance. Speak as David, not the attorney, but the man.
Sure. If you are here in the United States and you're undocumented, or you're not sure what your immigration status is and you came here as a child, you owe it to yourself and to your family to find out, do you qualify for this program? Can you apply? It can turn your life around, and it can have knock-on effects, not just for you, but for your parents, your children, your brothers and sisters. Do this. Go on the internet and Google the words pro bono EOIR. Pro bono EOIR.
Executive Office of Immigration Review.
That will come up. First top link will be a list of nonprofit organizations around the country, wherever you are. You can click on that link for your state and find a nonprofit closest to you. Go in and meet with a nonprofit immigration lawyer and see what they have to say about your situation. If you're a parent thinking about bringing your family to the U.S., you know, hypothetically, I'm going to tell you, do what makes sense for you and your family. If you got to pursue your dreams in another country, who am I to tell you no, that you can't do that? And my personal hope is that we see a world where we don't have these walls between countries, whether they're literal walls or whether they're legal walls. And that's my dream for the future.
David, those out there, those immigration folk out there that want to reach out and hire you because you touch them, how do they get in touch with you?
Sure, they can give me a call directly at 646-441-0741. That's 646-441-0741. Or they can look for me online at davidbenyon.com. That's DavidBennion.com.
David, thank you so much. I want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you for sharing with us. And I want to continue this conversation, have a part one and a part two.
Right.
Thanks, Deborah, for having me
ladies
on.
Ladies and gentlemen, some really quick announcements before we go over to Sister Brack. Our station is in the Germantown section of Philadelphia, and our station owner is bully for local announcements as it relates to Germantown. Yeah, I said bully. I sound like a white girl, didn't I? Germantown Select Friends School is having a holiday concert on Thursday, December 19th from 7:30 to 9 o'clock at the Germantown Friends School, West Coulter Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Germantown Friends School resonates with music this time of year, and in the Low Performing Arts Center, the holiday concert kicks off the festivities, featuring excerpts from Ernest Bloch's Avodath Hakodesh, AVODATH HAKODESH, under the direction of Steve Kushner. The festival chorus comprised of the upper school chorus, faculty members, staff, and alumni. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. Type into your browser Germantown Friends School or come to www.gtownradio.com. Click on our calendar. We have all the community events in red in addition to the shows. One show we want to feature tonight, tell you about, to get ready for. Tomorrow, December the 18th from 12 to 2, tune in right here on G-Town Radio for Mount Airy Groove with Ian Ranzer. It's gtownradio.com. Ian's show is jazz, soul, fusion, and all things funky. From Adderley to Yesterday's New Quintet and everything in between, Mount Airy Groove is the place to hear funky jazz jazz rarities, Dusty 45s, and a lot of Fender Rhodes. Check out Mount Airy Groove every Wednesday from 12 to 2. Ladies and gentlemen, please don't forget, we're still doing our 2003 fund drive. Our goal was $7,500. Go to gtownradio.com, click on donate. You could donate on behalf of For the People if you so choose, or the Broken Truth Show, or any show here on G-Town Radio. As we do on every show at this time, it's over to Sister Black.
She tried to catch me all off guard, but I got this. All right, so this piece is called Dreaming. Dreaming Was a Stink. I can rewind to a time when we were free to dream. A time when harsh reality didn't rob us of our I wanted bees and replace them with our gotta bees. I gotta be a survivor of poverty. Poverty struck and stuck with a mockery of democracy. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a lawyer. Has been replaced with I got to wake up to see the next morning. I got to put some food in the house before dawning. And I hope the law of the streets don't decide my fate like a foreman. I used to dream. Sweet dreams of a ghetto child. But my dreams got taken when my ribs start touching. They was damn near breaking. No good smells in the kitchen. No frying, no bacon. Made me say hell yeah to the streets and forget education. Education. The only thing they can't take from me. I left it underneath my pillow with those sweet dreams. Dreams turn shallow. Dreams become a stink. Because I don't have time to learn. I don't even have time to think. I just got to react to my habitat before I become prey to society's predatory ways. Or until someone tries to save what's left of us. Provide us with the way out. Exit us. Exit us from this nightmare we are barely living in. Give me back my innocence. So I can dream again.
Wow. Like okay. See, ladies and gentlemen, what happens when Deb tried to be the producer and run stuff? I'm like 10 minutes early. We right. ain't got to go off the air to 9:20. It's only 9:16.
I was looking like, yo, she kind of caught me off guard, but I'm going to get out of the way.
Listen, I'm trying to do, I don't want to plead into Sister Black's time. And just so y'all know,
all great. We sister shows. We rocking the Nision.
Broken Truth Show right after this. All poetry, and tonight they're doing a
we doing a tribute to some of the greats in the poetry world, some of the most famous, the most historic poems, and some of the people you know and love, Langston Hughes, Maya Angelou.
Wow.
I say Shakespeare because I believe Shakespeare.
Maya's piece, I am not ashamed to say, her pieces. Whew,
Maya
shit fly over my head.
Still I Rise.
Still I Rise is different.
Phenomenal
look
woman.
Look at some of Maya's earlier stuff, baby, when she wasn't old and cantankerous.
Oh, all right, I got you.
You had to reach up, get some hash, right?
She make you
call your smartest friends, sit down with them, and break that shit down.
That's poetry,
though. That shit was crazy. Exactly. It makes you go through all that. Ladies and gentlemen, most important things I hope you get from this show tonight is this. We have people who are here struggling and fighting just like the rest of us do every single solitary day. But they don't have the same protections that we have. Is it our job to do something about it? I don't know. What do y'all think? I say to you, the next time you see someone who you coin an illegal, don't just walk away and ignore them.
Right.
At least be impacted about what they're about. Go ahead, Sister Black.
Before we go off the air, I just want to read this one email from Zane from Miami, Florida.
Zane?
All right. Yeah, Zane. Okay. Zane says, I am Cuban by birth, but was born here when I was 3 years old. I'm now 35. My father and mother took a speedboat to this country, risking our lives to get here and make sure I had a better life. But my parents did the right thing, and the moment they were able to legalize our status in this country, they took advantage of the amnesty program back in the early 90s. If we can do the right thing to legalize ourselves in this country, everybody can and should. No special treatment.
Come on, Zane, baby. But there are no amnesty programs, and ain't none coming, dude. So, listen, this woman's what we do, Zane.
So
I want
is
you
there...
to go to school, get your degree, become a goddamn politician, and talk Congress into giving some more amnesty programs. So, really quick, what's amnesty? What were we going to say, Black? Sorry, go ahead.
I'm saying is not a program like that in place now. Whereas
hell
though,
no.
When people come over, they can become legal citizens.
When was the last
for
time
Cubans,
we offered an amnesty?
For Cubans, there is.
Okay.
And that's for political reasons that go back to the 60s.
That's different, right.
So, really, for a Cuban national to say, well, everyone should do this when not everyone can do it. It's, that's not the way it works. But, you know, there were Ronald Reagan, famous Republican president, was the one who passed the last real general amnesty law in 1986. And now we have all these conservative politicians who idolize Reagan, but they're not even willing to go as far as he did. And extend the same benefit of the doubt to...
Well, Reagan and Nancy had no choice because all their help was illegal.
What's that?
All their help was illegal. They had to do the amnesty thing. Go ahead. He's like,
So now... we're looking at even a more serious situation now. We've got 11 million people undocumented. And people say, well, you know, that's the problem. We gave an amnesty 30 years ago, and look what happened. The problem just got worse. Well, that's the wrong way to look at it, I think. What's happened since 1986? We haven't made our immigration laws better. We've made them more harsh and more strict, and we're actually sealing people into the United States, because if they grow up here, if they have their families here, if they set foot outside of the U.S., they're not going to be able to come back.
No doubt.
So we're actually creating undocumented people. And the way to the solution for that is to fix the laws. That's what we got to do.
So, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested, I put some information on the For the People Facebook page. Listen, I'm trying to get better at my organizational skills and my time, and I'm right on the money now. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. You've been listening to For the People, Law and Plain Language on www.gtownradio.com. G-Town, the what sound from Germantown. That be our time, ladies and gentlemen. Say bye, fam.
Bye.
We out.
Information presented on For the People is provided as general legal information. The general legal information is intended to inform consumers, is not intended to substitute for specific legal advice as it relates to the listener's specific legal issue. Consumers are cautioned not to rely on the general legal information broadcast on For the People as legal advice. No attorney-client relationship is created, intended, or implied between the consumers of For the People and Deborah Rainey Esquire, the compassionate lawyer, or the law office of Deborah D. Rainey. Please consult with an attorney for your specific legal issue.